Hello, this is Margaret Dixon on Page Turners at 89.7 WTBR FM Pittsfield. Today we're going to be reading something a little different. It's a couple of tales from a Japanese author called Kenji Miyazawa. He was a well-known fantasy author and poet in Japan, and his stories are very fantastical, as I implied before, not without their moments of horror. So, without further ado, let's go with the first of the two stories we're reading. First of all, it's a little tale called The Restaurant of Many Orders. Two young gentlemen, dressed just like British military men with gleaming guns on their shoulders and two dogs like great white bears at their heels, were walking in the mountains where the leaves rustled dry underfoot. They were talking as they went. "I must say, the country around here is really awful," said one. "Not a bird or beast in sight. I'm just dying to let fly at something. Bang, bang. Anything, so long as it moves."
"Yes, what fun it would be to let a deer or something have a couple of shots smack in his tawny flank," said the other. "I can just see him spinning around, then flopping down with a thud."
They really were very deep in the mountains. So deep, in fact, that the professional hunter who had come as their guide went astray and wandered off somewhere. Worse still, the forest was so frightening that the two bear-like dogs both got dizzy, howled for a while, then foamed at the mouth and died.
"Do you realize that dog cost me 2,400 silver pieces?" said one young gentleman, casually turning its eyelids back.
"Mine cost me 2,800, said the other, his head tilted ruefully to one side. The first young gentleman went pale.
"I think I'll be getting back," he said, gazing into the other's face.
"As a matter of fact," said his friend, "I was just beginning to get a bit cold and hungry myself, so I think I'll join you."
"Then let's call it a day. What does it matter? On our way back, we can drop in at yesterday's inn and buy a few game birds to take home with us."
"They had hares, too, didn't they? So it'll come to the same thing in the end. Well, why don't we go home, then?"
But the annoying thing was that by now, they no longer had the faintest idea of the way back. A sudden gust of wind sprang up. The grass stirred, the leaves rustled, and the trees creaked and groaned.
"I really am hungry," said one. "I've had an awful hollow feeling under my ribs for quite a while."
"So have I," said the other. "I don't feel like walking any farther."
"Oh, for something to eat," said the first.
The pampas grass was rustling all about them as they talked. Just then, one of them happened to look around, and what should he see standing there but a fine brick building? Over the entrance was a notice that said, in large letters, "Restaurant Wildcat House."
"Look, this is perfect," said one. "The place is civilized after all. Why don't we go in?"
"Funny," said the other, "finding it in a place like this. But I expect we'll be able to get a meal at any rate."
"Of course we will, silly. What do you think the sign means?"
"Let's give it a try. I'm just about collapsing with hunger."
They stepped into the entrance hall, which was very splendid, being done all over in white tiles. There was a glass door with something written on it in gold letters.
Please come in. No one need have a moment's hesitation. They were tickled pink.
Just look at that, said one of them. Things always turn out right in the end. Everything's been going wrong all day, but look how lucky we are now. They're telling us not to worry about the bill.
I must say, it does seem like it, said the other. That's what no one need have a moment's hesitation suggests.
They pushed open the door and went through. On the other side was a corridor. Another notice in gold letters on the back of the glass door said,
Plump parties and young parties especially welcome.
They were both overjoyed at this.
Look, we're especially welcome, it says, said one.
Because we satisfy both conditions, said the other.
They walked briskly along the corridor and came to another door, this time painted bright blue.
What a strange place. I wonder why there are so many doors.
This is the Russian way of doing things, of course. It's always like this in cold places or in the mountains.
They were just going to open the door when they saw a notice in yellow letters above it.
We hope you will appreciate that this is a restaurant of many orders.
Awfully popular, isn't it? Out here in the mountains like this?
But of course. Why, even back in the capital, very few of the best restaurants are on the main streets, are they?
As they were talking, they opened the door. A notice on the other side said,
There really are rather a lot of orders, but we hope you will be patient.
Now, just what does that mean? Said one young gentleman, screwing up his face.
I suppose it means they're busy, and they're sorry, but it will be a while before the food appears. Something like that.
I expect so. I want to get settled down in a room as soon as possible, don't you?
Yes, and ready to tuck in.
But it was most frustrating. There was yet another door, and by the side of it hung a mirror, with a long-handled brush lying beneath it. On the door it said in red letters,
Patrons are requested to comb their hair and get the mud off their boots here.
Very right and proper, too. And back in the hall just now, I was thinking this was just a place for the locals.
They're very strict on etiquette. Some of their customers must be rather grand.
So they neatly combed their hair and got the mud off their boots. But no sooner had they put the brush back on its shelf than it blurred and disappeared, and a sudden gust of wind moaned through the room. They huddled together in alarm and, flinging the door open, went into the next room. Both of them felt that unless they fortified themselves with something warm to eat very soon, almost anything might happen. On the other side of the door, there was another unexpected sign.
Please leave your guns and cartridges here.
Sure enough, there was a black gun rack right by the door.
Of course, said one young gentleman. No one ever ate with his gun.
I'm beginning to think their customers must all be rather grand, said the other.
They unshouldered their guns and unbuckled their belts and put them on the rack. Now there was another door, a black one, which said,
Kindly remove your hats, overcoats, and boots.
What about it? Do we take them off?
I suppose we'd better. They really must be very grand, the people dining there in the back rooms.
They hung their hats and overcoats on the hook, then took their boots off and padded on through the door. On the other side was the notice.
Please remove your tie pins, cufflinks, spectacles, purses, and anything else with metal in it, especially anything pointed. Right by the door, a fine black safe stood open and waiting. It even had a lock on it.
Of course. I imagine they use electricity at some point in the cooking. So metal things are dangerous, especially pointed things. I expect that's what it means.
I suppose so. I wonder if it also means you pay the bill here on the way out.
It seems like it, doesn't it?
Yes, that must be it. They took off their spectacles and their cufflinks and so on, put everything in the safe, and clicked the door shut.
A little farther on, they came to another door, with a glass jar standing in front of it. On the door, it said, "Please spread cream from the jar all over your face, hands, and feet."
Why should they want one to put cream on?
Well, if it's very cold outside and too warm inside, one's skin gets chapped. So this is to prevent it. I must say, it does seem they only get the very best sort of people coming here. At this rate, we may soon be on speaking terms with the aristocracy.
They rubbed some cream from the jar on their faces and hands, then took their socks off and rubbed it on their feet as well. Even so, there was still a bit left, so they both ate some surreptitiously, pretending to be rubbing it on their faces all the while. Then they opened the door in a great hurry, only to find a notice on the other side which said,
"Did you put on plenty of cream? On your ears, too?"
There was another smaller jar of cream here.
"Of course, I didn't do my ears. I might well have got them chapped. The proprietor of this place is really very thoughtful."
"Yes, he's got an eye for every little detail. Incidentally, I wouldn't mind something to eat, but it doesn't look very likely with all these eternal corridors, does it?"
But the next door was already upon them, bearing another message.
"The meal will soon be ready. We won't keep you as much as 15 minutes. In the meantime, just shake some of this perfume over your head."
And there in front of the door stood a shiny gold bottle of scent. Unfortunately, when they splashed some on themselves, it smelled suspiciously like vinegar.
"This stuff's awfully vinegary," said one young gentleman. "What's wrong with it, do you suppose?"
"They've made a mistake," the other said. "The maid must have had a cold or something and put the wrong stuff in."
They opened the door and went through. On the other side of it was a notice in big letters that said,
"You must be tired of all these orders, you poor things. This is the last one, so be good enough to take some salt from the pot and rub it in well all over you." A fine blue china salt cellar was indeed standing there, but this time both the young gentlemen were thoroughly alarmed. They turned their cream-smeared faces to look at one another.
"I don't like the look of this," said one.
"Nor do I," said the other.
"Lots of orders means they're giving us orders."
"Yes. And I've an idea that restaurant doesn't mean a place for serving food, but a place for cooking people and serving them. And that means that we..."
He began to shake and tremble and shake so that he couldn't go on.
"Then we... Oh, dear!"
And the other one, too, began to quake and shiver and quake, so that he couldn't go on either.
"Let's get out!"
Still shaking all over, one of the young gentlemen pushed at the door behind him. But, strange to say, it refused to budge. At the other end was another door with two big holes and a silver knife and fork carved on it. It said,
so nice of you to come. That will do very nicely indeed. Now, just pop inside, please.
What was worse? Two blue eyeballs were ogling them through the keyhole.
Oh, dear! Cried one, quivering and trembling. Oh, dear! Cried the other, trembling and quivering.
And they both burst into tears. Just then, they heard voices talking furtively on the other side of the door.
It's no good. They've realized. It doesn't look as if they're going to rub in the salt. What do you expect? The way the boss put it was all wrong. You poor things and the like. Stupid, I call it. Who cares? Either way, we won't get as much as the bones, even. How right you are. But if they won't come in here, it's us who'll get the blame.
Shall we call them? Yes, let's. Hey, gentlemen, this way, quickly. This way. The dishes are washed and the vegetables nicely salted. All that's left is to arrange you nicely with the greens and put you on some snowy white dishes. This way now, quickly.
The two young gentlemen were so distressed that their faces went all crumpled like pieces of waste paper. They peered at each other and shook and shivered and silently wept. There were chuckles on the other side of the door. Then a voice shouted again.
This way, this way. If you cry like that, you know, you'll wash off all the cream you put on specially. Yes, sir, coming, sir. We'll be bringing it in just a moment, sir. Come on, we haven't got all day.
Yes, hurry up. The boss has his napkin tucked in and his knife in his hand, and he's licking his lips, just waiting for you.
But the two young gentlemen just wept and wept and wept and wept. Then, all of a sudden, they heard a woof, woof, and a grrr behind them, and the two dogs, like white bears, came bursting into the room. The eyes behind the keyhole disappeared in a twinkling. Round and round the room, the dogs rushed, snarling. Then, with another great woof, they threw themselves at the other door. The door banged open, and they vanished inside, as though swallowed up. From the pitch darkness beyond came a great meowing and spitting and growling, then a rustling sound. The room vanished in a puff of smoke, and the two young gentlemen found themselves standing in the grass, shivering and shaking in the cold. Their coats and boots, purses and tie pins were all there with them, hanging from the branches or lying among the roots of the trees. A gust of wind set the grass stirring, the leaves rustling, and the trees creaking and groaning. The dogs came back, panting, and behind them someone called, "Gentlemen! Gentlemen!"
"Hey! Hey!" they shouted, suddenly recovering their spirits. "We're over here! This way, quickly!"
The professional hunter in a straw cape came rustling toward them through the grass, and they really felt safe at last. They ate the dumplings the guide had brought with him, then returned to the capital, buying some game birds on their way. But even back in the capital, and however long they soaked themselves in hot baths, their faces that had gone all crumpled like waste paper would never go back to normal again.
Well, that was quite an interesting story. I think most of us would have noticed the red flags long before they did, though, but who knows? For those just tuning in, this is Margaret Dixon, reading a couple of stories by the author Kenji Miyazawa. This next story is called The Dahlias and the Crane.
At the top of a small hill, amidst the orchards, there grew two yellow dahlias, as tall as sunflowers, and one dahlia that was taller still, with a great red flower. The red dahlia was hoping to become the queen of the flowers. When the wind came raging from the south, dashing great raindrops against the trees and flowers and shrieking with laughter as it tore green burrs and even twigs from the small chestnut tree on the hill. The three splendid dahlias would merely sway gently and seem to glow all the more intensely. And when the mischievous north wind, for the first time that year, went wailing like a flute through the blue sky, the wild pear tree at the foot of the hill shook its branches busily and shed its fruit. Yet the three tall dahlias merely gave the very slightest of dazzling smiles. One of the two yellow flowers said, as though to herself, her attention fixed on the southern sky near the horizon, "Today the sun seems to be scattering rather more of its sparkling blue powder than usual." Peering earnestly into her friend's face, the other yellow dahlia said,
"You look a little pale today. I'm sure I'm the same."
"Yes, you are," said the first.
"But you," she said to the red dahlia, "why, you look wonderful today. I feel you might almost burst into flames."
The red dahlia gazed up at the blue sky and, shining in the sunlight, smiled faintly as she replied,
"It's not enough, though. I shan't be happy until the whole sky seems to blaze red with my light. It makes me so frustrated."
Before long, the sun went down. The twilight sky of yellow crystal sank in turn. The stars came out, and the heavens were an immense abyss of bluish black.
"Pea tree tree," called a crane as he flew by, dark beneath the starlight.
"Crane," said the red dahlia, "I'm very beautiful, aren't I?"
"Very beautiful. So red."
The bird disappeared into the dark depths of the marsh beyond, calling softly as he went to a single white dahlia that bloomed there unnoticed.
"Good evening."
The white dahlia smiled shyly. The waxy clouds over the hills turned a muddy white, and day broke.
"Oh," cried one yellow dahlia in surprise, "you look even lovelier, as though surrounded by a reddish halo." "Yes, honestly," said the other, "it's as if you'd gathered all the reds of the rainbow around you." "Oh, really? But I'm still not satisfied, even so. I want to turn the whole sky red with my color. The sun's sprinkling rather more gold dust around than before."
Both the yellow flowers fell silent and made no reply. Golden evening gave way to a cool, fresh night of indigo. The feathery crane went flying urgently across the star-studded sky.
"Crane, I shine quite a bit, don't I?"
"Oh, yes, quite a bit."
And, as he descended into the dim white mist in the distance, the crane murmured softly again to the white dahlia,
"Good evening. How are you this evening?"
The stars revolved, and to Venus's last song, the sky turned silver all over, and a new day dawned. This morning, the sunlight was all gleaming waves of amber.
"Oh, how beautiful you look today! Your halo is 5 times bigger than yesterday. Really dazzling. Look, your light reaches as far as that pear tree over there."
"Yes, I know. But I'm still miserable. Nobody said that I'm queen yet."
So the little yellow dahlias gave each other a sad look, then turned their wide eyes toward the hills that rose deep blue in the west. The fragrant, bright autumn day drew to a close. The dew fell, and the stars moved around, and the same crane flew silently across the sky.
"Crane,
How do I look tonight?
Let's see. Why, magnificent, I think. But it's getting quite dark, you know.
And as he passed over the edge of the marsh beyond, the crane said to the white dahlia,
Good evening. A lovely evening.
Day began to break, and in the violet half-light, the yellow dahlias glanced over at the red dahlia, then suddenly turned frightened faces toward each other and said not a word.
Oh, I'm so frustrated, said the red dahlia. How do I look this morning?
Bright red, of course, but not quite so red as before, perhaps, said one yellow dahlia.
How do I look, then? Tell me, how?
Well, we're the only ones who think so, said the other yellow dahlia, fidgeting uncomfortably. So please don't take it to heart. But it seems to us as though you've got dark specks on you.
Oh, no, don't go on. You're tempting fate.
The sun shone all day, and the apples on the hill turned a glossy red on one side. Twilight descended, dusk drew nearer, and night came. The crane flew across the sky, crying, Pea tree tree, pea tree tree.
Crane, crane, can you see me tonight?
Well, not very clearly, I'm afraid.
The crane flew on hastily toward the marsh, calling to the white dahlia as he went.
It's a bit warm this evening, isn't it?
Another day dawned. In the pale light that smelled of apples, the red dahlia said,
Quick, tell me how I look today. Quick!
However hard the yellow dahlias peered in her direction, they could only make out something darkish and hazy.
It's still night. We can't tell.
No, tell me the truth, said the red dahlia on the verge of tears. Tell me the truth. You're trying to hide something from me, aren't you? Am I dark? Am I dark?
Yes, it looks like it, but we can't really see properly.
Oh, dear, and I do so hate red with black spots.
Just then, a short man with a yellow pointed face and a strange pointed hat came along with his hands in his pockets. When he saw the red dahlia, he shouted,
Ah, this one has it, the mark of the Reaper.
And he snapped the stem clean through. The red dahlia was borne off helpless in his hand.
Where are you going? Oh, where are you going? Cried the yellow dahlias, racked with sobs. Here, hold on to us. Oh, where are you going?
Faintly from afar, they could hear the red dahlia's voice. The voice grew more distant and more distant still, till finally it was lost in the murmur of the branches of the poplars at the foot of the hill, and the glittering sun rose through the tears of the yellow dahlias. A little more melancholy than scary, but still a sad little tale of vanity. And I did a little research after this. Apparently black spots on a dahlia can mean that it's dying, so... yeah, that's what the whole black spots thing was about, I think. Anyway, that's it for today. This is Margaret Dixon on Page Turners. As usual, I enjoyed reading to you, and I hope you enjoyed listening. I'll see you next time.